Book 1, Chapter 8 is really a strikingly original and multifaceted chapter. The title is Of the Wages of Labor. Smith starts with the point that before the accumulation of capital and also tools, labor received the entire economic product. This point comes from Turgot, and of course it was later picked up by Marx. It became a staple of classical economics, namely the comparison of labor working without capital and then labor working with capital. Smith makes the central point, again drawn from Turgot, that masters advance materials and capital to labor, and this makes labor more productive. Not only does labor have more inputs to work with, but the labor also is supported and tided over during the period of production. Smith thus outlines a pretty simple and straightforward case for how it is that there are gains from trade between capital and labor. But note that in this account, Smith is actually somewhat suspicious of the masters or the capitalists. He notes that they have superior bargaining power, and he thinks that this is because, to some extent, the employers are able to enforce some norms of collusion which make them reluctant to bid up wages to hire more or better workers. Nonetheless, in this chapter, Smith stresses what is really one of the central points of his work and one of the central contributions of Wealth of Nations, and that is this insight that it is an increase in the capital stock and also wealth that is what boosts the wages of labor. If you were to ask a modern economist, what are the few truly important insights which economics has to offer that maybe not everyone in the world understands, it's this: that the high wages of labor do not come from minimum wage laws, they do not come from the bargaining power of trade unions for the most part, but wages of labor become high when there is more capital invested per worker and when a society is wealthier, and Smith saw this more clearly and expressed it more articulately than any economist who had come before him. In this chapter, Smith just passes from one remarkable claim to another. They're not all fully documented, but actually all of them, upon examination, are pretty reasonable. Another claim that Smith makes is that an increase in the population is actually the best mark of prosperity in a nation. And at the time Smith was writing, this is most likely true. Greater agricultural productivity would feed more individuals, and better living standards would allow individuals to live longer and avoid problems of sanitation and infant mortality, and Smith rightfully saw the growth in the numbers of mankind as a major sign of progress. Of course, living in the world of, say, 2013, this isn't true anymore. What we see is that richer nations are more likely to have, for instance, birth control, and a lot of times their populations are declining. Nonetheless, Smith is laying out pretty clearly just what prosperity means. It means, for his time, the ability to support a greater number of human beings in lives worth living. Smith also has a fascinating discussion of China, and he portrays China as a nation which has become stuck in a stationary state. He argues that China, at its current point, is doing as well as its laws and institutions can allow, but that China does not have the best incentives for the further accumulation of capital and growth of living standards. Nonetheless, China is locked into this pattern, this stationary state, and Smith seems to think that China actually can maintain the standard of living it had back then for an indefinite period of time to come. What an economist thought of China was perhaps an 18th century litmus test, and when you read Smith on China, you get an overriding sense of just how important he thought laws and institutions could be for producing more wealth. Finally, toward the end, there's a striking claim about human psychology, and this ties back to some themes in Smith's earlier theory of moral sentiments. Smith makes the point that growth and progress, more than levels of income, seem to be what make people happiest. So it's when people are advancing in life and earning more money than before that mankind reaches its happiest stage, not simply when people have high levels of income but are staying put. There's a good deal of modern evidence for this claim, and it's another way in which we can think of Adam Smith as one of the fathers of modern behavioral economics. In any case, this chapter on wages of labor, it's extremely wide-ranging, it integrates economics and history, it shows Smith to be just a strikingly original thinker, capable of tying together ideas from a broad palette of human history. And to me, it's one of the most interesting and one of the most Smithian and one of the most readable sections of Wealth of Nations.